It's a beautiful but cold Tuesday here in outside of Houston, Texas, which is where we are. We call it Third Coast, those of us who live here. And I think one can wonder why it's not the West Coast and it's not the East Coast. In any event, the North can have this weather, that's for sure. We've had two freezing mornings, and it's been one of those winters, I think, that we're not used to here in Texas. But in any event, I want to go back about 55 years, which is pretty scary, because I was 5 years old, if that gives you any indication, if you can add. When I made a visit to the Grand Canyon with my parents, we were making a cross-country trek from New Orleans to California. And in my inimitable way, I used to rise or get up in the morning long before my parents did. And we were at the Grand Canyon, and we were staying in a little log cabin type of thing. And I'd get up in the morning, and I'd sneak out, and I'd go to the ridge and the rim of the canyon. And one morning, I happened to meet up with a man by the name of Sam. And he was introduced himself as Hoppy Sam. As 5 years old, I called him Happy Sam. In any event, for about 5 to 7 days, we were at the Grand Canyon. And every morning, I would get up, and I would go and meet with Hoppy Sam. And he made a very lasting impression on me. Obviously, I couldn't recall and can't recall some of the conversations that I had with him, but I do remember him giving me a gift before we as a family left the Grand Canyon, and he's really been with me in my heart ever since. So I was very excited when a friend of mine, Althea Gray, recommended the guest we have today. And his name is John Kimmy. And among other things, and we're going to talk about all the other things too, but one of the things that he has done is he was sanctioned to respond to requests from groups who wanted to hear the prophetic Hoppy message. So John Kimmy is with me today, and I don't know, John, do we want to start with the Hoppy prophetic message, which obviously I think I must have had ingrained in me as a very young child? Or shall we start with a little background? I'm going to let you guide me there, because maybe we need to do the other before this one. It's up to you.
Okay. Well, good morning, and buenos dias, and aloha, and en la catch, and all of the other ones.
Well, great.
I just wanted to clarify that that is pronounced Hopi, not Hopi.
Hopi. Yeah. Okay. There you go. That's where I got happy from.
Yeah, well, a little about my background. Yeah, I was blessed to have met the last living Hopi prophet back in 1974. And he and I became fast friends, and I became a traveling companion of his. He was not only the last of four men designated in 1945 to deliver the Hopi prophecy, but he also is the Mungwe of the village of Hotavilla, which is on Third Mesa in Hopi land. That's the last stronghold of the tradition there, and he was a very important key figure in the traditional society there. And so I kind of joined up with him, and over the years I traveled with him a lot. He liked me as a traveling companion, and he was quite old at the time. And so whenever he would be asked to deliver the prophecy, he would call me up and see if I wanted to go, and if I could go, I would. I was married and had three kids at the time, but I always made time for the elders. And so I had no idea that in 1983 he would kind of approach me and ask me if I would continue to deliver the prophecy. And so that's what I've been doing. I've dedicated the rest of my life to this kind of work, and it's taken me all over the world, and It's been very gratifying work to see how the message, the magic of the message, has really touched the hearts of the people and made changes in their lives for the better. And so I keep doing the work.
Well, do you want to share with us a little bit about what the prophecy is? Because I really feel that Sam must have left that with me. You know, I don't recall, obviously, at age 5. I just know that he made quite an impression. And I remember my parents being, you know, very, very intrigued with how I had, I guess, bonded with him. And he was a much older man at the time.
Yeah, well, you know, the Hopis are famous for their agrarian lifestyle in the most harsh climate and conditions anywhere on Earth. And so they're all seed planters, so they planted a seed in you.
He must have. I know he's been with me all my life. I'd love to find out a little bit more about who he was at some point.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Hopis are regarded by all the Native American tribes in North America as the elder tribe because they have been on their original homelands for perhaps even 5,000 years and were not moved by the federal government when most of the tribes were moved off of their homelands and put on reservations. And they, through all of their trials with the outsiders trying to change their lifestyle, they have very, courageously kept their ceremonial cycle, and it's unbroken. And they still do their four main ceremonies every year at solstices and equinoxes that keep the world turning. And so it was a great honor and privilege for me to be in association with them. I lived out there for a year and taught school there in their school and had served for many years as a kind of secretary to the elders who were at that time contacting world leaders and trying to give them the message of the prophecy. And so it was a very key time in history. They were the last generation of the real elders and the real traditionals. And so I had, I guess I was at the right place at the right time.
Well, I mean, this is just really one part of your background. And I thought, too, because that it's, you know, that was kind of intriguing to me. But your background really stems from many, many, many things. I mean, you seem to have had an archaeological background. So I think it'd be important for people to understand where all this came from, because as you mentioned, you're pretty much a cultural enigma. I don't know if you have any Native American blood in you or if this is just something that you gravitated to.
Well, I have a little Nez Pelin blood from the Nez Perce tribe, but it's pretty diluted with a lot of other ones. And I always say that I didn't have to effort much. I was born into a world that was in transition, and I listened to my instructions as best I could, and it led me to where I am. And I just feel very privileged to have been born and raised in these times.
I think all of us are. I mean, I think we're probably of the same generation, you and I, and yeah. we have had some very exciting, years here, and they just get even more exciting, in my opinion. Let's talk a little bit about. You know, your book and what the book is called Light on the Return Path. And what led you to write that?
Well, I wrote, what I wrote was what I call a future myth. I used mythological characters to kind of go through the experience of the present times and into the future. According to the Hopis, we are in the last days of the fourth world, and that's a cycle of four worlds, and that we are now in the beginning of the new consciousness, which is the fifth world. And so I wanted to explore that in my imagination, and not just mine, but the things that I used to discuss with the elders. And we all had visions and dreams, and we would talk about them together. And so I just tried to assemble some of those into a coherent path through these times, and let people know that this is not a fearful time, but a glorious time, and one that we should seize the opportunity within and practice our spiritual practices so that we can raise our consciousness to anticipate the continued intensification of this energy, and be in communication with our spirit guides so that we can hear our instructions and act on them. And so that's what the book is, and it's actually a six-hour-long story on 12 CDs that is broken down into three books. And they can be received at www.jackhoppertrilogy.com.
Great. Now, you know, it seems to me, just in some of the conversations and things that are going around today, when you talk about the fourth world and the fifth world, are we kind of talking about the same thing that you know, the I guess you call us the hippie generation or the baby boomers, the fourth and fifth dimension?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, there is going to be a dimensional shift, and we're in the first stages of that now. Part of the indication of where we are on timeline is this crazy climate change. That I'm sitting on my front porch in Colorado right now in my T-shirt, and it's about 5 degrees.
That's usually how we are here in Texas, and we are freezing to death.
Yeah, well, these changes have been predicted within this prophecy for 5,000 years. You know, prophecy, true prophecy, is different than prediction. Prediction is kind of like Nostradamus. He says this is going to happen and there's nothing you can do about it. But true prophecy always has instructions with every described potential event. And that's why it's been so practical for the people who carry prophecy. The Hopis, one of the reasons why they're still intact culturally is because they had the warning well in advance about the white man coming and the nature of the white man and what to watch out for and how to react. So that's just one example of the kind of practicality of this prophecy.
And getting into you know, the genealogical side of this, which is obviously where my background is you know, this kind of information. I know in having traveled and done tours throughout New Mexico and some of the Native American areas that they talk about how information is really passed down generation to generation to generation. And, you know, those of us who perhaps have family that came from, you know, we call the old country in Eastern Europe and Europe, we have information that never got passed down at all.
Yeah.
So there's a very big difference there that I see, and I'm real curious as to how that works.
Well,
and
our ancestors took up the printing press and became literate, and the non-literate cultures that managed to maintain oral tradition through what they call mouth-to-ear process cultivated something that we've pretty much lost, which is called memory.
Right.
We rely on the printed word for so much, and then we kind of stack it all up in a place called a library and only use it when we need something. But to the non-literate societies, they all were components of the whole picture, so that each clan had a specific duty to keep alive a certain part of their history. And when they come together, then they can see the whole picture. And so the library is the people. And it was quite an experience for me to be with these people with these perfect memories, because I'd ask a question to an elder and he'd say, "Oh, I told you that 3 years ago when we were in a cafe in Winslow."
Well, there are some people like my brother that seems to have some of that intact. He can remember stories that I honestly don't even remember happening.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, I'm the computer geek, so I guess that explains it. I guess I'm part of the library of the printed word.
Right. I remember when I first got my first cell phone, and within 2 weeks, all the numbers in my head disappeared. I no longer had the ability to memorize anything. It was all in a little box.
That's true. And, I mean, I used to be able to remember all kinds of things. And I used to say if I wrote something down, I could, you know, photographically remember what I wrote down. And
yeah, well,
now,
conveniently for us, the instructions are now to stay in the moment and not become desperate over things of the past or things of the future. And when we are in the moment, we are in a proper state of consciousness for being able to receive instructions. And so it's a good idea for all of us to set aside some time every day and just go into quiet space. And, you know, there's a fancy word called meditation. It doesn't have to be called that, but it just go into that quiet place inside yourself so that the chatter that goes on in our brains finally calms down and we're able to be in the here and now with the rest of the universe, and the rest of the universe knows what it's doing, so obviously if we can get in touch with that, we can find out.
You know, I tell friends, and I think it's so true, I listen to my dogs sometimes because, you know, they live in the moment, and, you know, every time I look at them sometimes I say, it's now, it's now, it's just now.
Yeah, right. I have a new mantra. I say, this is it, this is it, this is it.
Going back to, you know, the prophecy, is there, you know, when all this information was passed down, I mean, what you're saying is that were the Hopis in this area for 5,000 years?
Yes, right where they are today.
Right where they are today. So the prophecy came from where?
The prophecy came from a revelation. It came from, according to them, from the spirit of the fourth world who was living on that land out of Hopi at the time that the people emerged from the underworld, from underground, where they had found sanctuary in the last great purification, which was the flood. And the stories of the flood are throughout cultures all over the world, so it's pretty undeniable that it happened. And they came and met Masao, and Masao gave them the basis of their entire way of life. And he even carved a petroglyph in the rocks there that is called the Hopi Life Plan. And the Hopi people have been following that meticulously ever since. Now, one of the things that I wanted to share with you is something that is modern statement that was made by Hopi elders in Oraibi, in the Hopi Nation, for this time, for all people. And like me to, I'll read it to you.
Sure, I'd love to hear it.
You've been telling the people that this is the 11th hour. Now you must go back and tell the people that this is the hour, and there are things to be considered. Where are you living? What are you doing? What are your relationships? Are you in right relation? Where is your garden? Know your garden. It's time to speak your truth. Create your community and be good to each other. And do not look outside yourself for the leader. This could be a good time. There is a river flowing very fast now. It's so great and fast that there are those who will be afraid. They will hold on to the shore and they'll feel that they are being torn apart and they will suffer greatly. Know that the river has its destination. The elders say that we must let go of the shore, push off into the middle of the river, keep our eyes open and our heads above water. See who's in there with you and celebrate. At this time, we are to take nothing personally, least of all ourselves. For the moment that we do, our spiritual growth comes to a halt. The time of the lone wolf is over. Gather yourselves. Banish the word struggle from your attitude and your vocabulary. All that we do now must be done in a sacred manner and in celebration. We are the ones we've been waiting for.
Wow, that is profound.
It is. It is very profound.
And, you know, without going into any detail, it's even very profound for me right now because of some changes that are apparently coming in the wind for me, that I feel like I'm in a river, that I feel very much into that prophecy you just read.
It's a wonderful metaphor, that river.
Yes, it is.
Because we know that, you know, time has sped up. We know that we can't rely on nature to be as we've anticipated it in the past. And we know that the economic system and the social system is in the period of deterioration and revision. And that neutral place in the middle of the river is the only safe place. And that thing about, no, the river has its destination, you know. We don't have to understand exactly where it's going. All we have to know is it's the river and it knows where it's going. And all we have to do is keep our head up and our eyes open.
And go with the flow.
And I love that line that says, see who's in there with you and celebrate. Because the way we should be living our lives now is in celebration of the completion of something and the birth of something new. And we are the generation that our great-great-grandchildren are going to be telling their grandchildren about.
It's all, you know, making sense, and it's all fitting into place. And I think that this, too, is, you know, I mean, I don't know how you feel about this whole 2012 movement that, you know, people are talking about. But it, I mean, you know, they claim that the Mayan calendar, the Hopi prophecy, I mean, it's, you know, you look to ancient civilizations, ancient cultures, and everybody's saying the same thing.
Yeah, well, you know, even our ancestors knew this stuff. What interrupted that was, of course, the literacy, but also the Industrial Revolution got us so caught up in material world that we discarded the important stuff. We threw the baby out with the bath, so to speak, and now we're kind of high and dry. We're looking around saying, what do we do from here? And we really need to rely on these traditional cultures because they still have the answer. I always remember what the elders told me. They said, you know, when the last indigenous culture is destroyed, there's no hope for the rest of us. It's they're holding on to the thread of the continuum of these cycles, and that when we go into the fifth cycle, we are going to be transformed very significantly, because it's the beginning of a new cycle of four. And I've been real privileged not only to study these various prophecies and calendars, but to be traveling around with people now who are being called on now that the 2012 movie came out and everybody's legitimized it because Hollywood did. Everybody's getting interested in 2012, and so all of these scholars, like the Mayan scholars, are out there speaking to the people about these things. And I've been very privileged to meet some of these people and to ask my own questions and get my own perspective on it. And I think, you know, we can't deny that the changes that we're already involved in are happening. And it gives us the hope and the perspective of a transformation. You know, they say the end of the Mayan calendar. Well, I spent a lot of time with 3 weeks I spent in camping with Mayan elders who came up here to New Mexico for a conference, and they told me, they said it's the end of the calendar, the solar calendar. And as our consciousness gets to another point, we're going into galactic time. So our next calendar is going to be based on galactic cycles and not just solar cycles.
And what exactly does that mean?
Well, it means we're going to see farther.
Okay.
It means that we're going to participate more deeply in this universe. You know, we've been kind of like an experimental model here on this Earth. We were the newcomers, you know, as far as creation is concerned. And they say about 60,000 years, you know, the human beings have been around, and the other creatures have been here a lot longer. And so we're kind of an experimental model, and this is our test. This is our final for being able to graduate. And those that are listening, who are channeling their spiritual energy and listening to their instructions, will be the ones that survive.
That's the seems to be the story all around, I think, is you know, and there are some of us who have moved into this whole spiritual movement. And you know, I mean, my situation is a near-death experience over 3 years ago that sent me into this 11-11 thing very quickly thereafter, which has, you know, pretty much changed my whole view of my life and my world. And
I had the same thing happen. I had an operation where a five-hour operation, I lost a liter of blood and my heart stopped.
Oh, my God.
When I was brought back, it was like a reprieve, you know. Spirit was saying, well, we got some more work for you. You got to stay around.
You know, that's exactly how I felt. And mine was similar. I had a shorter operation, but had a blood clot subsequent, about 5 hours after the surgical procedure. So, you know, they had me back in with no blood flowing to the brain, so you know, it was pretty scary times there for a while. That's for sure. And
well,
as you well know, the healing is a process. It's a physical healing, emotional healing, and a spiritual healing that has to take place, and not in any order, and
right.
You know, cyclical based on the individuals, but. What I found probably the most profound was the spiritual healing that I felt that I had to go through.
Yes, definitely. You know, they call this the time of purification that we're in right now. And that's where we are being called upon to let go of the shore and all of our previously established images of ourselves so that we can you know, be in that neutral place and begin to receive the aspects of ourselves that are going to be needed in the future. And that's all spiritual work. It means that we have to continually see ourselves in touch with the source of everything. And when we do, then we're available. And that's what I found out after my near-death experience was now all I want to do is hang out with Spirit, because Spirit's telling me all kinds of good things, and I can count on them.
Well, it's pretty amazing, and while I'm not ready to, you know, announce some of my plans, I'm having, I guess, my own epiphanies here wants to take me back to the land.
Yeah. Well, you know, that spirit inside each one of us, we're supposed to be natural beings, you know. Just in this recent history, have we really gotten pride away from the land, and we see the consequences of it now, and realize that in order for us to mitigate these tremendous alterations of nature that we have been responsible for, we have to alter our own nature first.
Yeah.
I think it was, let's see, I'm having a senior moment here. Einstein, who said, the level of consciousness that created all the problems cannot be relied on to mitigate those problems. So it takes another level of consciousness for us to even begin to clean things up.
Yeah, you talk about someone who was way ahead of his time spiritually.
Yeah.
There's a man that really, really, really was. So if I gave out a phone number, would you be willing to take some calls if there are any callers out there that would have any questions about some of the things that we're talking about?
Yeah, as long as it isn't hundreds.
All right. Well, let's give out the number, and if you have any questions on topic for today, the phone number is 888-815-9756. You know, even though the topic of our conversation, the show, is where genealogy and spirit connect, we tend to take it either towards the genealogical side or towards the spiritual side. And today is actually towards the spiritual side. But
You know, we do have two genealogies. We do.
Oh,
have,
you do?
Yeah, we have our bloodlines, just like everybody.
Yes.
But we also have inherited another genealogy that has come from the experience of our ancestors who wiped out like 40 million people on the American continent in less than 100 years. And those souls were snuffed untimely, so they can't go on to the eternal world. So they had to wait and re-inhabit their old homeland as the people who are now living there. So we Americans have actually inherited the same set of instructions, you might say, as all of the Native American people before us. And that is our spiritual core, you know, is as Americans. And so that's what we really have in common, is that it's time for us to take our place and our responsibilities as those people who were doing that at the time that they were snuffed untimely. So a lot of people tell me, oh, I was an Indian in a past life. And I say, yeah, I'm sure you were. You know, so there's a kind of two genealogies there. And I think we listen a little more, at least I do, to the ones I've inherited here on this continent than my own bloodlines, which I don't know much about.
Right. But, you know, genealogy is a spiritual journey, actually, is to learn a little bit more about and understand, you know, what your bloodlines are and the stories and the lives that were lived. And, You know, sometimes you find out some things you want to know, and sometimes you find out some things you don't want to know.
Yeah, it's kind of like Pandora's box of new understanding of our DNAs. You know, all of a sudden a lot of questions are answered.
Yes.
Because of experiences our ancestors had that encoded it within us.
All right. You ready to take our first caller, John?
Sure.
We have Margo from New York on line two.
Hi, Margo.
Hi. How are you? I've been sitting here just mesmerized listening to... It's Jack Hopper, right? I have your website up now.
My name is John Kimmy.
Oh, you're John. I'm so sorry.
Yes,
I see
Jack Hopper. Jack Hopper is a character in my book.
Oh, I have to read this. This is all new to me. I apologize, John. It's an honor to be on here, and it's all completely kismet that I actually am talking right now. But I do have a question.
Sure.
I mean, I'm right at that cusp. I'm going through this healing process. I am transforming myself. It all happened after I turned 50, and a lot of different things caused me to let go of that person that, you know, carried around the stuff that just doesn't work now, to be open to receiving, you know, the what you speak of. But how do I determine if I'm being impatient or I'm being too lethargical and lazy, not acting on things that come my way? Or
yeah, well, a friend of mine in a sweat lodge ceremony once kind of mistakenly used the word in his prayer, patience.
I love it.
Pass that on to you, you know? It's, you know, if you feel that you're ahead of yourself or behind yourself, then you're not in the moment.
Right.
If you just stay in that moment and stay in a high spiritual state, then you are at the right place at the right time.
And it moves quicker when I'm not, when I'm staying in the moment. The progress of clearing and being more receptive.
Yes.
Oh God, I feel like I'm ready.
I've been studying with a Buddhist master for the last 6 years.
Me too. 8 years.
And he's you know, when he received enlightenment, he saw the future, and when he told me the future he saw, I just got goosebumps, and I said, wow, have you ever had an indigenous confirmation of this? He said, no, so I ended up taking him out to Hopi, and he consulted with the elders out there, and their visions totally matched. So what he says is that there has never been a time in human evolution when enlightenment was more accessible. So every time that you get a chance to go into a deeper state, you are going, that process of becoming more and more enlightened is happening. So there, it isn't a waste of time at all. In fact, the more time you can spend there, the better.
Yeah. I spent 8 years absorbing the Buddhist philosophy and starting to just, and once I let go of it and I stopped going to the temple and I stopped just trying so hard, and suddenly it just started to happen.
Yeah.
I guess that, you know, American, you know how we are, progress, progress, progress.
Okay. Right.
I felt like I wasn't making progress as soon as I stopped thinking that.
Funny thing, that that mind.
Oh, isn't it? But it's so interesting now. What an interesting life. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yes. We're
every
so,
moment
we're
with
so
spirit.
Blessed.
I'm sorry?
I just think we're so blessed to be in this time.
Yes. And did you say when you sit with spirit, you said it's like all you want to do because it's just so interesting just to be there?
Yeah.
Was it spirit?
Yeah, and that's the middle of that river we were talking about, you know?
Yes.
And the beauty of it is that when you are fully there, you can recognize the other people who are too. And that's the people you want to be working with at this time. Yeah. So many people are being given instructions to work with the young people, and that's wonderful, you know, because they're already there. And they just need to be able to stay there. And to have the adults encourage and nurture that is a very, very important part of this whole thing.
And I want to interject something too, Margo. About a year ago, I took a teleclass with one of, they were on my show back in December with Summer McStravick and her mother, Vina Sandrick. And you can find Summer at www.flowdreaming.com. But basically what they do and the whole concept is going into the flow and going down this river, you know, in a non-meditative state, but in a flow where you really feel yourself going with the flow. And I will tell you that within days of taking that class, being totally confused and not knowing where I wanted to go, is that my life opened up within days, and it's just been on a path, and I'm just staying in the flow. And, you know, it's some of the things that John's talking about, too. You know, things have changed for me in the last year. I mean, everything has changed dramatically.
That's happening to so many people, you know. It's so wonderful. I just got back from Cancun where I was a speaker at the Prophets Conference down there, and there were 400 people there, and I ended up spending an entire week with all of them.
And wow.
I was the first speaker, and then after that, I got so much feedback from people that they had really gotten the message and really taken it to heart. And of course, that's my payoff for the work that I do, is when I get that kind of feedback. And it's just amazing. These people were from all over the world, and they're all getting the same instructions at the same time, and it's such a wonderful confirmation.
John,
I have to thank you real quickly. I just have to thank you for my instruction. I just got my teacher's assistant license, and I was saying, do I want to go with kids? It's always been my calling. It's always been, kids have just gone up to me and just been attracted to me and held my hand, and it was just my gift. But of course, it's a gift that doesn't make any money, so it has no value. And then, of course, I hate to say this poor man, but Michael Jackson ruined it, I think, for all the glory that went, I don't know, but anyway, I just thank you so much, because you just gave me my answer.
Wonderful. Well, I've got great grandsons, and so I am very much involved with the younger generation. I've been a school teacher. I had my own school for many years, and I just feel that that's one of the most important things we can be doing right now, and I'm glad that that came through for you.
Oh, I always thought it, but I guess I needed, no one else speaks that way. No one, it's like kids, I don't think that way.
Yeah, well, when you say kids, say it with a capital F for future.
Fids?
Just say future instead of kids.
Say it what? I'm sorry?
Our children are our future.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's an investment that is very valuable, and I can tell you that just the satisfaction of having them get it is the real payoff. And as long as you're serving in that way, all your needs will be met.
Yes. Oh. And thank you for flow dreaming, too. I'm going online. I have wrote that down.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Margo. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you so very much. Bye.
God bless.
John, you know, what do we do with our friends that aren't staying up with what needs to be done, and they're living, you know, in the current situation and not willing to go down the river?
There's only one thing we can do, and that is to live it ourselves. If they're friends and family and they know us, they're going to get it. They're going to see something different, and then they can make their own decisions. It isn't something that we need to coerce anybody, because coercion has been, you know, the source of the problem.
Sure.
And so the best we can do is to enjoy the heck out of our lives and demonstrate that when we are in their presence. I remember when my mom and dad, I went to visit my mom and dad when I had my kids, and they lived 1,000 miles from me, so I didn't get to see them very often, but we got together, and, you know, they really couldn't understand my lifestyle and my philosophy and all this stuff, but they looked at each other while we were there, you know, and they said, but the thing is, they're happy, so we must have done something right.
There you go. And it is. It's all about happiness, and I guess maybe that is really what I saw in Hopi Sam, you know? He was Happy Sam.
Yeah. Well, you know, those guys are very, very intuitive, and they step into your life when you least expect it and gift you in ways that you carry all your life. And it's a wonderful thing to have experienced that myself and to be able to walk that walk with my own brothers and sisters in this point in my life.
You know, it's pretty phenomenal. I do think back and I wonder, you know, some of the... All I remember is being engrossed in conversation with him, and I do remember having very early spiritual situations as a young child, you know, speaking with spirit, and, you know, I was one of those, I think, I would define myself probably as an indigo child that we would have today, as, you know, I had all my little friends that I'd play with in my room, my imaginary friends, and it was, you know, I think my mother was very worried about me, because I seemed to really do much better there than I did with the real peeps in that time, period of time growing up, but, you know, I've always had some spark of, you know, of spirit talking through me, with me, all the time.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I'd like to offer up to your listeners is if they feel that they need to kind of accelerate their process, is the whole Native American concept of vision quest, in which you would actually go out in nature and fast and pray and wait for a vision. And it's been so reliable that it's in within every culture in North America and other ones throughout the world. They usually happen right after puberty, but they can happen at any time in life. And in fact, most of the elders that I knew did it as a practice once a year. And it really helps to center you and to get you to meet your guides. You know, at puberty, when you are going to become an adult, if you do that process, then you get the connection with a spirit that is going to accompany you for the rest of your life. And that, you know, no adult should go forward without one, is the way that the native cultures believe. And you are respected, and sometimes they get, the young people get a new name. And so they have that new name, and that's their adult name. They're never called by the old name again. And so that rite of passage is very important at any age. And if you have children, you have teenagers, you might look into how to conduct that with your teenagers so that they have that opportunity.
You know, that's very interesting because, you know, we have in our organized religion, and I can, you know, can go off on that subject well, too. But, you know, we have these periods in the Jewish faith. We have, you know, bar mitzvahs and and Catholicism. I think you have whatever it is. But it doesn't that does nothing, in my opinion, that, you know, to guide you spiritually. It's a passing, and it's lost. I think over time the whole spiritual side of what the purpose was. I think maybe at one point bar mitzvah was, you know, part of that process, but, you know, in today's you know, practice, I don't think anybody really you know, takes it to that level that you're talking about anymore. And yeah.
Well, as an educator, you know, I really see that you have to, there are certain steps that you have to provide for young people before they reach puberty. And when they do, there are certain steps that you have to lay out for them as a guide after their transition. And, you know, some people call me up and say, oh, would you do a rite of passage ceremony for my teenage daughter or son? And I say the ceremony is meaningless by itself. You have to do this process, and the ceremony is a part of that process. And that's where, you know, when we're seeing right now that we have a whole generation of young people that have been captured by the cyber world and can't even relate to people face to face. They have all these relationships on Facebook and Twitter, but they don't know their next-door neighbor. And I think that we have to really look at that, because they have become so addicted to that. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but I have.
Oh, yeah.
I've separated young people from those gadgets, and they are helpless. They're afraid. They don't know what to do. And so it's very important that we spend one-on-one time, and we spend time in nature with our children and invite them into the real world again.
Yeah, that is so true, and I think it's even important for us as adults. I mean, you know, to, you know, spend, you know, take some time, whether it's out of a day or a week or something, you know, to go get out and, you know, in nature and get grounded, because, I mean, you know, we get into these rat races, and, you know, you get into one, and it's hard as heck to get the heck out.
Yeah, well, the thing is that we're going to be jogged here real soon with an economic crisis that is going to make the last one look like kids' play, and one of the things that we're all going to be called upon is to be producers of our own sustenance, of satisfy our physical needs through our own skills. And if you don't have those skills, you probably won't make it. You know, when it says know your garden in that Hopi elders thing,
right?
They're assuming you already got a garden, that you know what grows in it and what your family will eat and where the water's coming from and what season to plant in, and all of these things are necessary to know now, because we don't know if at harvest time this fall that's going to possibly be all we got to eat.
That can be a little frightening, couldn't it?
Yeah. And
yeah.
I can tell you from my own experience that teaching young people how to garden is one of the most gratifying and exciting experiences to observe in them, because when they realize that they have the power to manipulate nature to their own advantage in very compatible ways with nature, then the empowerment really happens, and they go for it. And so, you know, even if you live in a city, or, you know, if you got a backyard, dedicate it.
Whoops. I have dogs.
There's some nature.
They usually stay pretty quiet. But, whoa. I'm going to mute. Go speak, John.
Well, I've been involved in agricultural education and research for quite a length of time. And what I find is that there are great varieties of food crops that have been left by our ancestors that need to be need to survive and need to be rescued and cultivated. And so it's really a good thing if you can go around to other gardeners and get seed from them rather than buy them in a little packet.
Well, I tell you what, I had an unbelievable crop of limes and oranges this past season for the first time, and the bushels. And God, was it fun to pick them and share them and, it was really my first garden.
Yeah, it was fun, huh?
Yeah. I have one other question. I don't know if it's a sore spot or not, but earlier you mentioned sweat lodges.
Mm-hmm.
And sweat lodge?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's had a lot of bad publicity, of course, lately. In fact, a lot of people I don't think ever heard of it before. The events of last, I guess it was October, November. Maybe?
Yeah.
What exactly is that supposed to be rather than what it has been portrayed to be? I mean, what is the real purpose of a sweat lodge?
The real purpose is purification. It's a purification ceremony. If you ever did a sauna, you know that you get clean from the inside out.
Right.
And so this is, by all accounts of all the different practitioners of this, they say that this was the original ceremony. That the Arapahos call the sweat lodge the first house. And they revere it as the introduction of anything that is going to transpire beyond that. And so it has been used, very, very, in a very sacred manner for all these years. And along comes somebody who decides to capitalize on it, and, you know, nobody's ever charged for a sweat lodge. That just isn't done. And he charged a lot of money, and he pushed too many people in there, and got it too hot, and burned out all the oxygen. That's just craziness, you know. It's somebody that has not been properly trained in the first place, and somebody who had other motives than spiritual guidance, and it caught up with them.
Yes.
And it's a good lesson. Good lesson for the rest of us.
Absolutely.
If you're on a spiritual path, don't try and make your profession out of it. That's a giveaway. You know, all these people who go to a weekend workshop and say, oh, now I'm a guru and I'm going to hang up my sign and charge money, are missing the whole point. You know, spirit is has never charged us for anything. And if we're going to spread spirit to other people, we have the same obligation not to charge for it.
Okay. Interesting. I think that's a very powerful message, too. John, thank you so much for being here. It was quite an inspiration. I hope we can do it again sometime soon. I know that there's lots more that we didn't even touch the surface on. Your websites, I think there are two of them. One is called www.dancingawakethefifthworld.com. And these are all on my website. And http://jackhoppertrilogy.com.
And I ordered the book, yeah.
Yeah.
And I just say that Dancing Awake the Fifth World is spelled out F-I-F-T-H.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
And thank you, Susan.
I really enjoyed it, and I think a little bit more eye-openers once again for me. So thanks again, John, and you've been listening to Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect, and hopefully we'll see you next Tuesday, and we'll have another exciting hour in plan for you.